Welcome to another episode of Inside Ivy Hoops. I'm your host, Mike Tony, joined by a guest who has a lot to be happy about after last weekend, our Princeton beat writer, George Clark. George, how are you?
Very well, Mike. It's great to be with you, especially after such a momentous weekend for the Tigers.
Yeah, it certainly was. Let's delve right into it then, shall we? One of the games of the weekend and the season, to be sure, really felt like a toss-up, and it turned out to be just that. Saturday night at Jadwin, Princeton hanging on for a 70-69 victory that really could have went either way, I guess you could say, to say the least. Princeton, though, a remarkable performance from deep, 13 of 23 from three-point land. Although, you know, I felt like Chris Lewis really got the better of Richmond and Iriguzo for much of the game, but it was certainly Iriguzo who had the last laugh at the line. No small feat for a player who has struggled in the past from the charity stripe. But might as well just open it up to you, George. You were there. What were your thoughts on a heart-stopping win for the Tigers to stay unbeaten in conference play?
The most outstanding thing is what you've already hit on, and that is the fact that Princeton, an improving Princeton team, made 13 out of 23 three-point attempts. That's a terrific output, that's for sure. I had the impression early on, Princeton got off to a very good start, got up to a double-digit lead before stalling, but I had the impression that Harvard was a little bit fatigued from that heart-stopping loss they suffered the previous night at the Palestra. You know, Saturday night in the Ivy League, it's a cliche, but it's certainly true. It requires a lot of guts to keep up, and certainly Harvard is loaded with talent and guts and resourcefulness, and came storming back as we knew they would.
Yeah, that's a good point. Of course, really a brutal weekend for the Harvard men, coming up just short in both games to get swept. Not something that happens to them very often, having lost at Penn in overtime, having come into that game 19-1 in their last 20 overtime games under Tommy Amaker, dating back to 2009. Really a remarkable stat, but it was not to be at the Palestra Friday night for the Crimson. You know, this, as far as Princeton's win goes, you know, needless to say, they're not going to go 13 for 23 from deep every night, and there will probably be a couple of Ivy games where the three-point line fails them, and they have to get it done inside, or they don't get it done at all. But we've seen that they have the personnel, whether it's Iriguzo on the block or Ryan Schwieger posting up or Jalen Llewellyn driving inside to make hay inside if they need to. But yeah, this is a dangerous shooting team. Actually, first in conference play so far in two-point percentage, second in three-point percentage. So they're getting it done really both inside and out.
Well, but the key for this team, and it has been the key for Henderson's successful teams, is their ability to defend the basketball, and they are clearly improving in that regard. That coming out of the 3-week hiatus and then have Dartmouth hold them to 17 points in the second half. That was a remarkable effort, and it clearly showed that the team did not suffer any rust from being off for 3 weeks. And, you know, you could see that coming. They had a Division III game, as you recall, the previous Sunday afternoon. And the rotation plays most of the time didn't play too much in that game. They got out to a very clean start. It was a Division III game, I understand, but the regulars just played beautifully and sat most of the afternoon. So I think Henderson realized that the momentum they had built up was not lost. His team is improving. The team is a very unselfish group. They're really invested in each other. And it comes from the top down, senior leadership. Ari Rigozo, Jose Morales, and the injured Will Gladson set high standards for this club, and they bought in.
Well, you made a great point, George, that the defense has improved dramatically, certainly statistically, from where it was at in early in the non-conference. Princeton have the best in the league in conference play so far at defending the three-point line, something that they were really unremarkable at going into Ivy play.
I think it was remarkable how poorly they were defending the three-point line early on. We were around 350 for a month in among Division I teams. So without Schwieger early on and without Ethan Wright, pardon me, he was hurt early on as well. And that kid has just emerged as an elite defender for Henderson. He's so happy to see it come.
Yeah, and also Princeton not fouling, not putting opponents on the free throw line. That's been big in Ivy play too.
They're among the nation's leading teams in terms of not committing personal fouls, and that's been a big help too.
Yeah, you can see it. I mean, you know, when they're contesting shots, you know, they're very good at staying upright and not letting the ref have a choice to make, you know, in whether or not.
You know, we've seen that, and if you watch the big programs on TV, and they're on every night, you hear that kind of observation made frequently, that defenders are going straight up. They're coached to go up. They're coached to put their hands up and try to avoid those kinds, that avoid having a referee with a choice to make. I think it's a nationwide emphasis. Clearly, it's something that's working to Princeton's advantage right now.
So let's look at the flip side of that white knuckler. Harvard now 2-2 in league play. What are your thoughts on, and of course still without Bryce Aiken, what are your thoughts on what Harvard can do, what their ceiling is? Is this indeed an Ivy League championship contending team? Not just contending team, but a team you think has a very good shot of winning. How do you size up where Harvard stands right now?
I think Harvard clearly has the talent to win the thing. Obviously, it's going to come down to one game for them at home. Assuming they can get to the final game, no one playing at home has lost a final game in the tournament's brief history. We'll find out a little bit more tomorrow night, late afternoon, when Harvard plays at Yale. But they had a tough weekend, but wow, those games could have gone either way. Both of them could have gone either way. We wouldn't be having this conversation. I think the separation, everybody that has separated from Yale. Yale is head and shoulders above everybody else right now. Clearly, they're according to Ken Palm, they're in the top 50 right now. Everybody else is outside the top 100. ridden Penn, Princeton, and Brown seemed to me could beat each other up all the time.
Yeah, and having asked the question, I feel like I can answer in the affirmative along with you, George, as well. That yeah, this Harvard team is certainly built to win, even without Bryce Aiken, to win the Ivy League tournament, certainly at home, and possibly contend for the championship. Although, you know, there definitely seems to be quite a bit of separation, as you noted, between Yale and the rest of the pack. Looking at Harvard's schedule, though, it breaks very well for them. You know, they stay on the road this weekend at Yale and Brown, but then they've got six of their final eight at home, and then if they make the conference tournament, of course, they stay there at Leviades this season. So, you know, even if they, let's say they split this weekend and go, even if they get swept, let's go with the worst case scenario. They go 2-4 after this weekend in Ivy play. You know, getting six of those last eight at home, they can close that gap fairly quickly. We've already seen a team at 0-6 get in.
That's certainly true.
I think we can see a 2-4 team get in, certainly. Actually, Penn got in after being 2-4 just last season as well. So, of course, that was 2 years after they were the team that got in at 0-6. So, you know, the table seems to be pretty well set for Harvard. Penn, on the other side of that coin, that Friday night coin with Harvard, had a great weekend, notching a sweep to avoid going 0-3 in Ivy play for the fourth time in five seasons, to start out the slate, getting that three-point victory against Harvard Friday night, and then shutting down Dartmouth in really just an ugly game, a rock fight, with an 8-point win over Dartmouth at the Palestra Saturday night, a game where both A.J. Broder and Chris Knight struggled mightily from the field. It's the first game that A.J. Broder didn't get into double figures against Division I competition in 40 games, I believe. So they were still able to get it done. Penn's defense looked much better this past weekend. Looked a lot better when they weren't playing Princeton, actually. I'm a little more comfortable with where Penn stands after not just getting that weekend sweep, but how they did it. And how they did it was with, I thought it was very strong defense, not just against Dartmouth, holding them to, I can't remember offhand how many points per possession. 0.72. That's pretty low.
That's a great night.
Yeah, you like that. You like that when you can do that. And against Harvard, though, too, I thought, you know, they did a good job guarding the perimeter. I felt like Penn held its own inside and was also able to attack what has statistically been and traditionally been a very good interior defense of the Crimson. Not just early on when Penn built that 24-5 lead when Harvard looked like it was still sleepwalking. But at crucial points afterward as well. So, you know, good weekend for Penn. The defense, very encouraging signs. Of course, Penn will have to hit the road this weekend, but we'll get into that later. Also on the men's side last weekend, there was a lot going on. Yale easily blew out Columbia Friday night, winning by 31 at JLA. both teams shot well in the Saturday night matchup. The Big Red losing by 15 to the Bulldogs. And then Brown gets a sweep, a much-needed sweep, a sweep that it really needed to get in the Ivy League tournament race at home against Cornell and Columbia. Overcame a four-point deficit with about 5 minutes to go Saturday night against the Lions to pull that one out. It's easy to overlook Brown, I suppose, since, you know, they're certainly not cellar dwellers by any stretch, but they've, of course, yet to make an Ivy League tournament, so they're sort of in that in-between range, broadly speaking. They stay at home this weekend too. So we'll see, we'll see how things turn out for the Bears. I feel like they can cut down a little bit on the turnovers, which have been a problem so far, in Ivy play. You know, they crash the boards well. They've got a versatile roster of players that can beat you. They're not overly reliant, I don't think, on any one player. They're an intriguing bunch, and they play with pretty good intensity.
No question about it. And watching Ken go 0-6 and get in the tournament and then get off to a lousy start again last year. Every team, I think, but Columbia and Cornell believe they have a legitimate shot, and everyone really does. Everyone controls his own destiny at this point in the season.
Yeah.
And feels that the path, they can see a path to get there.
Right. Things are looking a little tough for Dartmouth at this point, though, in their Ivy League tournament outlook. They, of course, 0-4. Only scored 90 points on the weekend at Princeton and Penn, although that was more than the women did. We can switch over to the women's side. For continuity's sake, it was a tough weekend for Dartmouth. Both sides. 34 points in a 32-point loss against Princeton Friday night. 66-33 got doubled up by Penn at Leed Arena Saturday night. So, yeah, if you're a big Green basketball fan, you would like to see a lot more offense very quickly.
Women. I think the Princeton women probably suffered more or came out of the break with a little more rust than did the men. Dartmouth held its own in the first quarter against the Tiger women. In fact, I believe they had a one-point lead after the first quarter.
They did, yeah. It was 14-13. Yeah.
Yeah. That hasn't happened to Carla Berube very often, that's for sure.
No.
They turned it around after that and then kind of had a pretty much easier at Harvard than they expected to have.
Yeah. You would have thought on paper that a Saturday night having to travel down to Harvard after the Dartmouth trip would be challenging, and it didn't look like it was. they kind of made it look easy. They jumped out early, and it was, an impressive performance, particularly on the defensive end.
Well, that's the key. Mallory is such a fantastic scorer and such a great offensive talent that a lot of people focus on that. But the key to the team's success is just incredible defense, of which Allery is a huge component, of course, but Carly Littlefield is kind of the ramrod on defense.
Yeah, and the defensive improvement seems to be the signature of the very young Carlo Berube era so far. You know, that seems to be the one defining thing that wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like Princeton's defense was anything to sneeze at last season either. But the intensity and the statistical awe, I guess, of how they're, you know, just shutting teams totally down. You know, scores, shooting percentages, you know, speaks for itself, really.
You could have a bad night shooting the basketball. That's going to happen to every team at some point. The defense keeps your hopes alive, and I think that's something the men can look to as well as the women.
Yeah, defense travels, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And it did for Princeton this past weekend. It also did for Penn. The unfortunate thing is the additional defense stayed home at Leavitt's against Penn Friday night. Penn losing that one 58-51 to Harvard, able to come back a little bit there in the second half, but just a 2-point second quarter for Penn at Leavitt's that ultimately turned out to be the difference. An impressive Friday night showing for Harvard, whose defense is you know, has also improved. I think significantly up from it was last season, which it needed to with Katie Benson departing the program. Although Lola Mullaney has been a terrific talent for them as a first year this season. But Penn, of course, as mentioned before, shutting down Dartmouth in Hanover Saturday night. But really, though, I thought the weekend of the team of the weekend, certainly on the women's side, I thought was Yale. A tough trip at Columbia and Cornell. Yale was up by just 3 at halftime at Columbia before, you know, really pulling away with authority in the second half there at Levian, and then trailing the following night up in Ithaca by 14 at halftime. It was a 40-26 deficit for Yale. Cornell was really shutting them down and getting what they wanted at the other end of the floor. And Yale just turned it around in that second half, 48-point second half for Yale to pull out the win against the team that really did the most head to head to keep Yale out of the Ivy League tournament last year. Cornell sweeping Yale, 2 huge wins over Yale down the stretch to get into the Ivy tourney over Yale. And for Yale to win the way it did at Cornell and stay 4-0 in Ivy League play was huge.
And it sets the stage for a huge game in New Haven next weekend.
That's right. Yeah, looking ahead a little bit there. That one will be should be a seismic matchup there in New Haven that Friday night. Yeah, what else ground is there to cover on the women's side? Well, I guess you know, it was a Brown you know, came up short. You know, we've seen them certainly last year really just get blown out in games. I thought they hung fairly tough on the road. They've had some impressive individual performances, but you know, maybe not quite enough firepower for the Bears at this point.
No, they give up too many points, and they're not able to generate enough offense to overcome that, in my judgment.
I'd say your judgment is correct on that one, as usual. And looking ahead to this weekend on the women's side, Princeton's going to be next weekend for Yale, but first another tough trip at Harvard and Dartmouth. Yale gets these tough road trips back to back. We'll see the Yale at Harvard matchup Friday night is particularly intriguing. Yale coming in with number one scoring offense in the league against one of the top scoring defenses, not the top scoring defense, that would be Princeton. But Harvard again has been very stingy defensively, and that should be, we're talking about two strong front courts going at each other in that game. So we'll see how that plays out. But Princeton returns home to get Cornell and Columbia. The Cornell at Princeton game last season, of course, became surprisingly interesting late, given how the rest of the game had transpired. Cornell had trailed by 21 early in the fourth quarter and got within two with 34 seconds to go, but couldn't quite pull off the comeback season ago.
Well, I'm going to suggest to you that if Princeton gets a 20-point lead, they're not going to give it up.
Yeah,
getting it might be hard to do, but I think the women should. They're not going to be looking. Carla Berube will not let them look past this weekend. You just don't do that, and this team is experienced enough to avoid doing that. So I think they're going to be pretty good games, but the Tiger women are going to hang on this weekend.
Well, I mean, Cornell can be tough. They play very aggressively defensively. They don't let you get anything. The turnovers are an issue for them, and we've talked about that on the show in past episodes. But yeah, I mean, you would think this would be kind of a chalk weekend for Princeton. So we'll see. Columbia, of course, an intriguing team as well, getting, as it did last season, great contributions from a rookie. So we'll see how that game plays out. But Harvard stays at home again. The game against Yale, they get Brown on that Saturday night. Penn gets Columbia and Cornell in that order. It's going to be up to Dartmouth to try to take advantage of Yale coming in the second night of a back-to-back. Maybe try to get a sweep and get back in the Ivy hunt. I did want to quickly, we were talking about scheduling the Ivy League schedules, the new scheduling before we started recording. George, you had some very succinct thoughts on that. What's your thoughts on the scheduling change?
I'm glad that Princeton no longer has 3 weeks off in January. I think everybody in the league is happy that Princeton has finally gotten rid of that anachronistic academic situation it was in for centuries. As far as the schedule going forward is concerned, as I suggested to you, I'm going. I don't care when they play.
Now that's what the league wants to hear, I'm sure. And I do think a lot of fans feel that way. Again, three back-to-backs being preserved in next season's Ivy slate. with the addition of 2 weeks over the Ivy Conference span. Moving on, looking ahead to what should be a very intriguing weekend of men's action on Friday and Saturday. Yale gets Harvard at home. That will be a 5 o'clock tip on ESPNU. Harvard getting that national showcase 2 Fridays in a row. Of course, earlier starts, they'll have to manage it better than they did at the Palestra. Try to get out to a stronger start there. But yeah, that's when you look at it on paper, you know, that's a pretty, you would think that Yale would certainly have the advantage there. But, you know, as we already talked about, Harvard's got more than enough.
I don't
weapons.
Know how many times, if any, an amateur team has lost 3 straight road games or 3 straight games in the league. You couldn't pick 3 tougher ones in a row than Penn, Princeton, and now Yale. But I think his kids know what's at stake, and they really don't want to get another loss this early in the season. So they on paper they figure to lose, but you just don't know. And that, what a great game, great matchup that's going to be.
Yeah, you'd have to go back to 2016, the last time they lost 3 straight Ivy games. Actually, they lost 5 straight that particular season. But yeah, they as we said, they're getting these tough road games out of the way though. After this stretch, you know, it's gonna shake out very favorably for them down the stretch. They get to stay at Leviades. But Penn and Princeton, of course, will hit the road for the Empire State road trip. Penn gets Columbia first, and then Cornell. Princeton gets to start up in Ithaca. Of wits between Mitch Henderson and Brian Earle in Ithaca. You excited for that one, George?
I certainly am. As you know, I know Brian Earle is a friend of mine. I always look forward to seeing him. He's such a fine young man. He's had some real problems this year. You lose a 2,000 career point scorer in Matt Morgan, and at Stone Gettings leaving the program, it's the cupboard has been bare this year for Brian. They really have struggled mightily, and I don't think their problems are going to be solved tomorrow night. But I'm looking forward to the game. You know, it's interesting if you look at Ken Pomeroy, who was a guru, a resource that most of us turned to during the season. He projects 2-point wins for Princeton tomorrow night and Saturday night.
Yeah, that's.
And if those are one possession games in the last minute, anything can happen.
Yeah, you're right, and that just goes to show you, you know, how. First of all, you know, it's tough to win on the road and back to backs against anyone, whether you know, whether they seem to be top tier competition or not.
But you talked about Cornell at Yale last week. They were in that game in the second half.
Oh yeah,
it turned out to be a 15-point margin, but they were in it. They played Yale very tough. The deal might have been looking past them. I don't know, but they were in it. That was on the road and probably the toughest place to play. And now they're going to be back home with every incentive. And Brian Earle is going to have them as pumped as they can be to be his alma mater. So anything can happen tomorrow night, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, then they've gone extra time in past seasons too.
Don't remind me. Oh, Boy, we had some real tough games there.
Yeah, it was Princeton at Cornell last season. Princeton came out with the win in overtime.
The year before that, it was triple overtime on Friday night.
That's right, yeah.
When Amir Bell missed the second one-on-one with 0.4 seconds to go, it goes triple overtime. We lose and then have to take that five-hour bus ride to Columbia, which we'll have to do tomorrow night. And you know the interesting thing about Columbia, I think 5-1 at home, and the only game they lost at home was to Albany by 1 point.
Yeah, well,
so they're 5-1 at home, so they're anything but an easy mark at their place. And Penn better worry about that tomorrow too.
That's right. Yeah, they had that 1 point loss at home to Albany back in December, New Year's Eve, and that's a good point. They've been away from Levian most of the season. And they finally get to come home, and show what they can do. You know, they're reliant on Mike Smith. Gabe Stefanini's not there, still injured. Of course, Patrick DePay transferred, and Columbia has struggled. They like to play a quicker tempo. They, as expected, with those standouts no longer around, you know, Mike Smith certainly is always running the show. He's been playing a lot of 40-minute games. The offense certainly runs through him. It's no secret. And so, it doesn't take much analysis to know it's going to have to be a gangbusters weekend from him, and an efficient one from the field if Columbia is going to hold serve at home this weekend against Penn and Princeton.
But I'd almost prefer to have him on Saturday night, since everything, as you suggested, everything that Columbia does goes through him. And playing Penn Friday night, they're going to have to rely on him a lot. He's going to have to play a lot of minutes. He works hard all the time. So the back-to-back Saturday night might be problematic for him. I have to hope it is, but I'd rather play him Saturday night than Friday.
Well, Princeton will. You'll get that. you'll get that luxury, I guess. Penn won't, though, and Penn's defense, aforementioned defense that has looked stronger in recent games, will be tested. Brown gets to stay home against Dartmouth and Harvard, and really, again, if you're Brown, you're getting Harvard on that Saturday night, of course, starting the weekend against Dartmouth. You would love to get to 4-2 in Ivy play. That would be huge, considering that six of the final eight are away from Providence. This is where you build your cushion.
That's for sure. They have an opportunity to do that this weekend. I think they can play with Harvard. I wouldn't bet on them, but I think they could certainly get into down the stretch in a close game. And again,
yeah, Ken Pom doesn't really like Brown's chances Saturday night against Harvard. Gives him a 37% chance. But, Brown does the little things well. They're an intense team. Tamanang Cho is, I think, a very underrated talent. He was the KenPom game MVP in Brown's win against Columbia this past Saturday. And we'll see. You know, we'll just have to see how things play out. Brandon Anderson very good at getting to the line, and you know, if you're Harvard, you know, you don't want to put Brown on the free throw line unnecessarily. That is something that you know, Brown typically has done very well under Mike Martin at scoring from the free throw line. Indeed, in conference play so far, they rank first in the conference in point distribution, percentage of points scored. Traditionally the key, and remain so for the Bears.
Mike Martin has done an excellent job. I think that program is now considered to be a pretty solid program. Very rarely have an easy game against Brown, no matter where you play them. Princeton can certainly attest to that recently. I just think he's elevated the program. Of course, the league itself has been elevated in the last several years, and Brown has kept pace.
It has. And that's not easy to do with Brown.
No, it's not.
You know, certainly Mike Martin has long been. I always have appreciated his ability to come up with very cool set plays out of timeouts. He's one of the best at that. That coaching is way more than that, but that's one of the little that's one of the little things that always comes to mind when I think of Coach Martin. Of course, though, his teams tend to be very fundamentally sound, and that matters a lot more often than set plays occur. But yeah, that's just something top of mind, I guess. For Brown, and a program that, of course, is coming off of a historic season last season, getting to the postseason, winning a postseason tournament game against UAB in the CIT there. And if you're Yale, you just keep doing what you've been doing. there was a good piece on the Mid Major Madness website today about how Yale, despite a great deal of roster turnover, is where it is right now, head and shoulders above the rest of the league. You know, talk about how Jalen Gabadon has stepped up to be a shutdown defender in the wake of Trey Fields graduating, having performed that role as the defensive standout for the team. Matthew Cotton had a 355% minutes per game increase year over year from last season. Gabadon of 300%, Eric Monroe nearly 300%, Swain and Paul Atkinson over 150%. So we're talking about players stepping up.
Well, what we're seeing, and it's so great to see, those guys, they're getting a lot more time now because of roster turnover. It's not that they've suddenly become great players. It's just that there wasn't enough minutes in a game for a lot of those guys to play on that team last year because it was so great. But Yale is extraordinarily talented and very, very deep. And it's certainly paying off this year. I I am in awe of what Jones has done up there. He's really set the standard, and it's going to be tough for anybody to beat them. Thank goodness they're not at home for the tournament.
Yeah, they of course already had that luxury last season, but I don't think anyone doubts that they can get it done at Levides next month. I did want to touch on news yesterday that James Foy of Dartmouth has been selected as a finalist for the Senior Class Award. You have to be a senior, and you have to have notable achievements in community, classroom, character, and competition. On last week's podcast, I highlighted Laura Bagwell Katalinich, Cornell, and James Foy. Obviously, we know what he can do on the court, but he's also done quite a bit off the court as well. So, you know, kudos to him. You can vote for him at seniorclassaward.com/vote.
Well, I think I might just do that. Because yeah. It's kids like that that make us proud of the league, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about.
That's absolutely true, and we've got a group at our place who are really standing out in that regard. You know, I will mention we watch message boards and internet traffic and people speculating about Player of the Year and all Ivy teams, and at this point, no Princeton player is getting a lot of attention in that regard, and that's because everybody's contributing. Nobody's really a standout. They're all contributing. All 8 rotation players scored in both games over the weekend, and everybody had a big moment. So it's just a great blend right now for Princeton, and they're 4-0 again, but this year it includes a win over Harvard. It certainly didn't when we were 4-0 last year, and then the roof caved in when Kennedy had to leave the team and Schweiger got hurt, but if we stay healthy this year, we're going to be in every game.
Yeah, 4-0 starts to Ivy play is something that Tiger fans have become accustomed to under Mitch Henderson. This team seems to have the goods to be in it for the long haul. Of course, last season they finished 8-6 in Ivy play, but I thought really overachieved in the Ivy League tournament appearance, which turned out to be the best game of the tournament on either side. Men's or women's against Yale when it was not expected.
You would bring that up. We were 14 points down at halftime, and I remember Derek Jones was broadcasting on the radio back to Princeton on the local station, and he was by himself, so he asked me to give him a few minutes at halftime, and we were looking at but to this year. And then, of course, Princeton came out and back in it and took a 7-point lead when Miles Stevens fouled out on what I would suggest are 3 questionable calls, but that's what happens.
Yeah, that was definitely controversial, to say the least. But just as a footnote, I did want to register that Laura Bagwell Katalinich was not named a finalist for the Senior Class Award. Unfortunately, I think for the reasons we outlined on last week's show, certainly think she should have been. But James Foy is a finalist on the men's side, and yeah, go vote for him if you can. Anything else that you're looking forward to this weekend, George? Any matchups or games within games?
Oh, I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly, Mike, as usual, and it's always a real pleasure for me to be with you and to be part of this site. I think we got a lot of followers, we got a lot of people interested in what we do, and that's just, it's great.
Well, I appreciate what getting your insight, not just on the podcast, but on the site as well. George Clark, thank you so much for coming on Inside Ivy Hoops as always, and good luck to the Tigers this weekend, although I think they've proven that they don't necessarily need it.
Well, I hope you're right. We're looking forward to the weekend, and we're looking forward to reporting next week on Ivy Hoops Online. So you're very welcome, Mike.